Okay, hello everybody, and welcome once again to the podcast brought to you by Smart Freight. I'm your host, Tash Jones, and our podcasts are available to be streamed online on Spotify, Amazon Music, and Apple Podcasts. Today's episode is our last in the series, and today we're going to be looking into the part of retail that can be overlooked, overcomplicated, and costly to business. Of course, I'm talking about returns. So today I have Laura and Emily joining me from Rebound Returns, one of our strategic partners. So hi guys, and welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Hi.
Hi guys, thank you so much for joining. Now, this is a question for Laura to start with. I've seen so much on social media about your recent campaign, the Love It or Hate It Marmite campaign for returns. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? I'd love to hear some more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a campaign that our marketing director, Charlotte, has wanted to get off the ground for years. And we thought, sod it, 2021 is the year that we're going to do it. So Marmite is very much a love it or hate it kind of thing. So we saw returns are obviously falling into that same camp as well. So we asked people to cast their votes once and for all, make a decision. Are you a returns lover or a returns hater? Because if you'd have asked that question 5 years ago, everybody would have been a returns hater. But we've come such a long way since then that we're actually surprised that the lovers took it and people are embracing returns much more now, which is great to see. So we tempted people in with a personalized jar of Marmite and asked them to cast their vote.
That's awesome. And I guess while we're talking about Marmite, it'd be rude not to ask you if you love Marmite or hate it.
Returns, I love. Marmite, absolutely disgusting. I ended up with the jar in my house after the campaign. And my partner made some Marmite on toast, and there was just Marmite all over my kitchen. My house stunk. I'm a firm hater when it comes to Marmite.
Emily, what about you on both subjects?
Again, I love returns, of course I do. Marmite, it was actually the first time I ever tried it was 2 weeks ago. Oh no. It's hot. It's just horrible. It tastes like petrol. Like what I imagine petrol to taste like. Definitely a Marmite lover.
I know our Marmite campaign coincided with Pancake Days. There was a whole debate in the office of do we have Marmite on pancakes, yes or no? And that's just so wrong. It's just so wrong.
Yeah, and Marmite on hot cross buns apparently is a thing. Like, who knew that? No, just no.
But I don't like hot cross buns either, so that's just a nightmare all round.
Oh no, I have to agree. I'm a lover of returns, but I'm definitely a hater of Marmite. I can't say I've ever. I'm not even sure if I've tried it. It just doesn't look appealing, and it's interesting, Emily. You say it tastes like what petrol smells like. That's quite off-putting. Maybe I'll have to try it. But anyway, moving on from that. I mean, yeah, as we said, returns, whether you love them or you hate them, it is a fact of life when it comes to running a business, be it in fashion industry, electronics, or basically if you're supplying goods, the likelihood is you're gonna have to deal with customer returns. And obviously, I work for a software company that mostly focuses on outbound shipments, and returns is an area I seem to be finding out, more and more about as course of my career here at Smart Freight. And I know the industry's grown and developed new ways of handling returns, but I thought, first of all, actually, it might be interesting for our listeners to understand how returns have actually evolved. Now, guys, can you share with us some stories of years gone by of maybe some returns being done very badly or even unethically?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm sure you'll agree from Smart Freight's perspective that delivery has been optimized within an inch of its life. Everybody's offering free next day delivery. You can get delivery to the office, delivery to your house, delivery to a locker, delivery via a little drone or a robot. So delivery was been done and returns was often forgotten about and just left behind. So retailers were really just leaving shoppers to their own devices, saying, here's a returns address, good luck getting it back. Here's a returns label, send it back however you want. If you were really lucky, it was here's a free returns label to send back via Royal Mail, for example. But nobody kind of knew what to do with returns and how to optimize that journey. So that's what we've been on a mission to do, is kind of revolutionize the way the world returns, because it's been done so badly previously. And I think really just through lack of investment and lack of retailers giving it a spot on the agenda to improve, and it never seems to make it to the top of the projects that they want to work on, just because it's nobody knows what to do and what the right solution is. And I hate to say it, because Brexit just gives me the fear, but I think Brexit has really like compounded that for a lot of people. So they've realized now that they can't just give shoppers a returns label and say good luck to you, because there's obviously customs to deal with and a whole other mess of stuff going on that they have to have visibility over their returns. So with labels in boxes, which is how it's kind of previously been done, there is just absolutely no visibility, there is no control, and it just created a big problem for retailers, because they had no idea what was coming back or why. And I think an evidence of that is that we ran a weird returns project, and we asked retailers to tell us what were some of the weirdest stuff that they'd had returned. And people had been sending back bricks claiming it was a dress, half-eaten ham sandwiches claiming it was a pair of shoes, several adult items that I won't divulge on this podcast at what they were. But it was, retailers just had no idea that this stuff was coming back to them until it arrived at their warehouse. You've also got then the challenge of your customers not knowing what's going on. And if a parcel goes missing, because they don't have that visibility, it's not until your customers start screaming and shouting of, excuse me, I haven't had my refund. Nobody knew that was going on. So it's been a real challenge for retailers, and we're seeing big improvements now, which is good. But I know there's been lots of challenges from a sustainability perspective as well, which I know Emily will have lots to say on.
Yeah, it's just really interesting then, Laura, you were talking about, the weird returns. Because do you remember when we were looking around one of our retailers' warehouses, and there's like a section in the warehouse which had just got everything that was returned, which wasn't meant to be. There was stuff like passports, mobile phones, remotes, even car keys coming back. So it was quite fun to kind of sit and kind of sift through some of the boxes and just kind of see what was there. But no, yeah, from a sustainable...
Who manages to pack their car keys in a return? It's just bizarre.
Yeah, I just got these visions of people just looking for their car keys or their remote, just turning the whole house upside down and realising it was actually at a retailer's.
The best one is when a guy sent something back and said, oh, I promise I've not worn it. But actually, he had worn it, and it was obvious he'd worn it by the fact that it had his wallet in the pocket. It's just so bizarre.
Yeah.
I never would have considered that people would actually send back items that weren't the item that they purchased. That's not something I've ever thought would happen.
Yeah, I think we've seen, like, with regards to returns fraud, it's not a very high percentage at all. Like, what we're talking about here is a very small percentage. A lot of shoppers, that they are very truthful and they return the actual items. But these small percentages, especially retailers who might, refund earlier on in the journey, some shoppers might have clocked on to that. But again, fraud is so small as a percentage of what we see anyway. But of course, when you're returning things that aren't necessarily there, especially like a brick, think of the emissions associated with that from a sustainability point of view. It's just a waste. And I think as well, what we've seen is really, we don't have to talk, like, dwell too much on unethical returns in the sense of, retailers burning stock. That infamous one retailer a few years ago who was kind of in the media for doing that. But we've seen more and more in the last few months, especially retailers really shifting their mindset and evolving into sort of putting sustainability really on their roadmap. So there's been a much higher level of awareness there, and whether that's because, with being in COVID, shoppers are demanding it a little bit more, sort of take action a little bit more, and retailers have to keep up with that changing mindset with the shoppers. So ASOS recently went paperless just last year. And, you know, 77% of shoppers are actually in support of retailers taking their return process online. And what we're seeing is when one retailer does something that's fantastic for the environment, like removing paper from the parcels, a lot of retailers follow. So in because of that, you know, 16 of our retailers have also decided to go paperless, which is absolutely brilliant. And there's been a much more, when we talk around visibility, you know, much more demand for retailers to be transparent around their emissions and their sustainability practices, which is why we're seeing so many more retailers publish their sustainability policies, launch sustainable clothing ranges. And as well, you know, I'm sure you're aware, Tash, about greener delivery options. It's increasing demand for all of those kind of solutions.
I think it's interesting I think with ASOS, they're seen as such a trailblazer in the return space, and particularly from an environmental perspective. And what we tend to see is what ASOS do, lots of retailers follow suit. And that tends to be because everybody wants to be like ASOS, but it's also because they kind of have to, because consumers are so used to shopping on ASOS and so used to the great experience that they get, that retailers recognize that in order to kind of get ahead of the competition, returns are the key battleground now. When everybody's offering next day delivery and everybody's offering kind of similar products in the fast fashion space, returns and sustainability, which are both coming up shoppers' agenda of how important they are, retailers have to adapt.
Yeah, most definitely. We're certainly seeing it here at Smart Freight from people looking to offer greener shipping options from the outbound side of things. And I totally agree on the return side as well. And certainly, you know, we're all kind of in a position right now where we can only really buy fashion online anyway. You know, there's all kinds of different reasons why you might need to return, because, you know, obviously, you're not sure what size you are, you can't try things on. So being able to return things ethically as well, I think, has just become more important to people like myself, for instance, who has a bit of a shopping addiction. So yeah, definitely, I think it's really important.
Yeah, I think, you know, even though I work in sustainability and I'm really kind of got my ear to the ground with all of these practices, I'm really starting to see that shift when you buy online. You know, at the moment, it's not a good day unless there's a parcel arriving. You get in that mindset. It's the only thing to look forward to is a delivery of loungewear. But yeah, I'm starting to see, you know, more messaging on the packaging around, you know, this is recyclable, the removal of paperwork, and more messaging on the outbound emails, you know, to say, you know, we are offsetting your delivery or your return. And we're also supporting these sustainability initiatives, and we're supporting beach cleans. And it's absolutely brilliant that retailers have really shifted from just being just about sort of making money to actually thinking, oh, okay, we're in this great position of influence. We've got these fantastic shoppers who are also like-minded in a sustainability point of view. So we're going to maximize our messaging to really help get the word out even more. And it's absolutely brilliant, the shift we've seen, like I say, in the last year. And I do think that COVID has been one of the key drivers for that.
We made it 15 minutes into the podcast, I think, before COVID came up.
It's going to come up at some point.
Yeah, definitely. I think that sums it up really well, Emily. And like previously, retail have just been doing the absolute bare minimum. So it's really great now to see them taking beyond doing just what's good enough.
Definitely. I think that kind of leads me on to my next question quite well, really. As you say, we've got this far without mentioning COVID, but my next question is about COVID. Obviously, during the last 12 months, buying behaviour's changed. You know, we've all been forced really to shop more online than we ever have before. I'm sure with everyone buying online, that's probably definitely affected how businesses are dealing with returns. I mean, how are you finding your retailers are dealing with the switch, I guess?
Yeah, there's definitely been a huge boom in e-commerce, and even the most kind of tech phobes among us are shopping online now. My dad, for example, absolutely hates shopping online with a burning passion, but during the pandemic, he's had no choice to. So it's opening a lot of people's eyes to how convenient online shopping can be. And I think because of that, this shift that's happened is going to be around to stay. And retailers are recognizing that as well. And obviously a huge part of that journey is returns. So they've realized that while previously they were saying, you know, free returns to store, for example, that's not good enough anymore. And they are having to offer shoppers a really slick online returns experience. Obviously, not only there's been a boom in e-commerce, but I don't know about you guys, but with COVID, everyone's been turned either into a fitness fanatic or a couch potato. Me personally, absolute couch potato. So I have no idea what's going to fit me anymore. So when we come out of lockdown on June 21st, my jeans are not going to be my friend.
No,
same here, most definitely.
I had quite a weird experience with lockdown, because of the first lockdown, I was definitely a couch potato. Second lockdown, I was kind of in between the two. And then the third one, I've really tried to go for runs and tried to get fit. So when I come out of it, at least I can maybe put one leg in my jeans. I think it's so funny that you mentioned that, Laura, because people really aren't in tune with their sizes anymore.
No, not at all. And I think that's why, obviously, through lockdown, everyone's just been buying loungewear, which, you know, it's stretchy, it fits. But then you've got an extra challenge of when we come out of lockdown, everybody's going to be, you know, turning to the party dresses or the office dresses, and anything that's kind of tight fitting with a zip has a higher return rate anyway. So if we look at online fashion, it has between a 30 to 40% return rate, edging closer to the 40% now. But with anything kind of tight fitting and a zip, that can go up to 60%. And that's when people know what size they are. It's just because there's no give in it. So if you look at, you know, when people have no idea what size they are, it's going to become a real problem. And that's why we've seen a big increase in customers bracketing. So that's people buying a size up or a size down from their usual sizing, knowing they're going to return some. So 60% of shoppers are now bracketing, and that's a 29% increase from 2019. So that's a huge jump of people just having absolutely no idea what's going to fit them. And that's all been caused by the coronavirus pandemic, really, because you, even when stores were open, you couldn't try things on.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been really difficult as a fast fashion consumer, not knowing what size you are and not being able to try things on when the high street has been open. And I can imagine the bracketing's definitely shot up by a huge scale during the pandemic. And I wonder if that will continue as restrictions ease. You know, as people are looking for those party dresses for June the 21st.
I think what's interesting is serial returners get a really bad rap of, you know, they're costly for our business, but actually people returning something can be a good sign, in that it means that they're learning more and more about their sizing. So the worst kind of customer is someone who buys something from you, returns it, and then never shops with you again because they had a rubbish returns experience, most likely. But somebody kind of buying a couple of sizes, figuring out what fits them, figuring out what doesn't, means they're only going to get better at understanding their sizing and then return less over time. So I think we can expect to see kind of a big boom in returns as we come out of this. But I do think that will settle down as customers just get used to knowing their body sizes again, knowing, you know, if they're shopping with new retailers, knowing how their products fit, because everybody's got different ideas of how their products fit, for example. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And we look at returns policies day in, day out. And that's a huge part of my job is looking at what retailers are doing a really great job of returns. And what was really great to see is that when the coronavirus pandemic hits, retailers were extending their return windows, giving their shoppers a longer time to return because they acknowledged that they couldn't get to, you know, a local shop to drop their return off and everybody was stuck in their homes. So they extended their returns policies. So what we're kind of keeping a close eye on now is how many retailers are going to be snapping their return policies back to 30, even 14 days, when actually Rebound research shows that extending the returns policy up to 60, 100 days doesn't really extend the time it takes your customers to return at all, with most customers returning within that 2-week window because they want their money back just as much as you want your product back.
That's really interesting. I have to say I'm quite guilty of returning to store. I have to say that that's probably my preferred method of returns if it's a high street retailer, for instance. But I hadn't considered, you know, the length of time people have to return being increased. Would, you know, I would have maybe assumed, I guess, as a novice on the subject, that that might increase the level of return. So it's really interesting to hear that, you know, it's not massively affecting things. It just gives customers a bit more time to get to the post office or wherever it is they need to go to fulfill that return.
Yeah, and customers are becoming so much more savvy when it comes to returns now. They've got higher expectations than ever. You know, 92% of shoppers say that the range of return options is an important consideration when they decide where to shop. So if you look at ASOS, for example, I don't know off the top of my head, but they've got 5 or 6 different return options that their customers can choose from to pick the one that's most convenient for them, versus if you're providing your shopper with one Royal Mail label. Personally, I hate the post office just because of the queues. So it's, you know, there's a big difference in the journey there of offering something that's actually convenient for the customer and giving them that time to do so. And yeah, you might get the odd customer who has their parcel sat in their boots for the full 60 days, but 9 times out of 10, they want their money back. So they're not going to dilly-dally taking it back to the post office. So yeah, the consumer expectations, it's been a huge shift, and particularly around their thoughts around their own impact on the environment. I know, Emily, you've got lots of research and lots of thoughts on how COVID has changed consumers' thinking around their environmental footprint.
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, changing behaviour from a retailer and a shopper point of view, as I mentioned, we have seen a massive, massive shift. And, you know, to be completely transparent and open with you, at the start of COVID in March last year, we saw a massive drop in the amount of retailers who were contacting us about, you know, sustainable returns. And I was furloughed, you know, as a result, because there just wasn't enough retailers who wanted it, who wanted to kind of extend on those discussions. And I remember going into a sort of a webinar with just like listening in, and likes of Coca-Cola was in there and Tesco, and they were saying, you know, we have had to slightly park sustainability while we focus on surviving. So, you know, people in sustainability was moving into the operation side, or unfortunately were being furloughed like myself. And when you came back, you had to adapt your role. So I did as well. I adapted my role and helped the key account managers kind of with their customer service portals and stuff. But as we've come out of that survival mode and we're coming into what I hope is a more of a green recovery, as I mentioned, you know, shoppers during COVID, there was a lot of time for reflection, lots of time for, you know, walking, exploring what's on your doorstep, beautiful walks, you know, thinking more around waste and going through your wardrobe, doing the clear outs. I know I did that many times. And thinking around, you know, not just that, but, you know, the emission side of things. So we saw that, you know, the actual evidence of all of these lockdowns, you know, clear waters in Venice and the amount of emissions that we were producing had dropped significantly globally. And I think as shoppers were thinking about that, as we're starting to shift out, that's where the demand has started to come back to retailers. And that's why retailers have to act fast. Otherwise, they will lose those shoppers who are so invested in it. So the discussions have come back with vengeance. There's been so many discussions with us. And obviously, we work both with retailers, but also we care so much about what shoppers want because it's a good predictability of what the retailers are going to ask for. So we've launched a recycling portal just last week, actually. So this portal where shoppers can donate packaging, plastic, beauty containers, things like that. Because, you know, when you go into the shops, there used to be some fantastic, you know, take back bins in store where you could, you know, dump off a load of shampoo bottles and you'd get a discount, like Body Shop, for example. And all of those have had to stop. So shoppers are starting to think, well, how can I recycle these difficult to recycle items? And that was just an example of a solution where we've worked with retailers and shoppers to create something to help them recycle. As Laura mentioned as well, you know, that we have done a lot of surveys with shoppers, and it just so happens that in the mix of COVID, David Attenborough did that fantastic documentary, A Life in Our Planet, and that had a massive impact on shopper behaviour and the shopper insight towards sustainability. And we saw that after that, in our survey, there was a huge shift in shoppers who were demanding more sustainable options. So I think it all kind of happened at the one time, and they all kind of linked together. And it's why you can't forget that the start of last year, we had those Australian bushfires, and that started it. Then COVID, then David Attenborough, you've got Greta Thunberg, and it's just created this real shift and really accelerated this movement to where shoppers now are checking the sustainability policy before they make a purchase.
I think the David Attenborough point was the real kind of hard hitter for me, because I'm someone who I try to do better, and I like to think that I'm doing the best that I can, but it wasn't until you watch that David Attenborough documentary that you're like, oh my God, like something has to change. And I think, you know, shoppers like me who, you know, thought about sustainability before, but it was kind of, you know, everyone else's problem, that has just been a total wake up call for them.
Absolutely, definitely. And I think even just switching to things like shampoo bars instead of shampoo bottles, you know, there's all kinds of different things going on, I think, in the industry that's helping people to shift to become, you know, more sustainable and sort of greener. I've definitely made some changes myself, and it's great to see you know, the pressure is on the retailers to keep up the good work they've been doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even now, from a returns perspective, I get frustrated as a shopper if I order something and it arrives in like really shiny black plastic that just can't be recycled. And the shopper in me is like, why haven't they given me a reusable bag? Just even something simple like, you know, ASOS, they have resealable tabs on their packaging. So you can just peel your tab off and reseal it to use the same packaging for returns. So every time I get something, you know, there's so many retailers out there that are guilty of sending huge cardboard boxes to send a tiny lipstick, for example. So there's definitely an education piece going on for retailers, and shoppers are waking up to this stuff now. And if you look at Twitter, you can just see reams and reams of shoppers complaining about this, whereas previously it would have been, you know, oh, my item is really well packaged, and oh, doesn't this like bag look really cool with all the branding on it? That feedback is shifting now, and it's very much looking like a, hey, you, Mr. Retailer, why have you sent me this awful plastic bag that can only be used once and I've now got to bin? Or why is there so much spare space in this cardboard box? You know, why have you sent me a box that I can fit in when I've only ordered a notebook? So Twitter's always an interesting place to look if you want to see adapting shopper behaviours. And when I talk to retailers about their returns policies and going through how they can improve their return strategy, I often go on their social media channels and call out some of these things for them, because from a returns perspective, you know, social media is a marketing exercise, and you know, marketing aren't typically involved in the returns conversation. So just saying, you know, here's all the feedback that your customers are giving you on social media, listen to it, and you'll learn so much about returns just from ordering something from yourself, going through that journey and looking at, you know, take your business hat off and look at it from a shopper perspective, and what really annoys you, what have you found inconvenient, and you can improve your returns strategy no end just by doing that.
Yeah, no, that's completely true. And I think, I'm not going to name the particular marketplace involved, but I think we can all read between the lines. I hate it. I can't stand it when I order something tiny and it comes in a box big enough to live in. It's so wasteful. And I think there is definitely pressure on the whole journey around ordering online when it comes to delivery. So, you know, being delivered ethically, being packaged ethically, and, you know, being able to return it in a way that's not going to be really detrimental to the environment. And I think, you know, there are some businesses out there doing things very, very well, like the, you know, ASOS, for instance, who do have the reusable bags. I've used them many times. you know, I think that if businesses can be a bit more forward thinking, from the packaging point of view, I think that would definitely go a long way towards helping sort of the cause, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, packaging is the first thing a shopper sees. So from a retailer point of view, it makes sense that that is kind of one of the top priorities. But for me, like the best part of my job is when I get to speak to retailers, the big ones, you know, the ASOSs, the Misguideds of the world, but then also these smaller retailers, and learn about, you know, yet they want to help, they want to do as much as they can, but because they're so small, they can only focus on certain parts of sustainability where they can make the most impact. And I think the most powerful messaging from retailers like that, I'm sure they won't mind me talking about it, let's take Wetsuit Outlet, for example. Their sustainability messaging is in line with their brand. So, yep, they care about plastics, absolutely. And they care about, you know, sustainable materials that their wetsuits are out of. But the messaging is more around beach cleans and plastic in the oceans, because that fits in with, you know, wearing wetsuits in the sea and stuff like that. So making sure that it's on brand, it really will help resonate with the shoppers. Because, you know, a wetsuit outlet shopper might care a little bit more around beaches than they might care about, I don't know, a sustainable cotton, for example. So if you are a retailer who can't do it all because you don't have the workmen to do that, like ASOS, who've got a fantastic team behind them, and they are smashing it, absolutely smashing it, just tweak sustainability to really fit in with what you do. And it will really help. It will really help drive sales as well, because, you know, shoppers really care, to the point where if they're looking at sustainability policy before they're even making a purchase, you're more likely to cement that purchase if you can kind of resonate with them.
Yeah, I think to add to that, Emily, I think firstly, I mean, we're 30 minutes into this podcast now. If you take a shot every time we've said ASOS, it really turns this into a great party game. But it's really interesting what you say about the difference between small and larger retailers, because smaller retailers, I think, do have a bit of an advantage when it comes to returns, because what we find is the returns journey and all of the pieces that make up a really great returns experience are managed by different people. So you've got the logistics team that are actually responsible for the process. It might be the marketing team that are responsible for how it's promoted on the website. Quite often it's a legal team that are behind the returns policy and an e-commerce team that are designing the in-parcel paperwork. And there are so many different teams that we see time and time again, that they just don't talk to each other, which is why you end up with really disjointed experiences. So we've mystery shopped retailers and found that the return options that they're listing on their returns policy are entirely different to the return labels you receive in your parcel, because those teams have just made isolated decisions about the things that they're in control of and haven't fed that back. And because nobody goes through and mystery shops themselves, nobody's spotting these things. So we point that out to retailers and say, look, we've looked at this from an impartial perspective, gone through the whole journey. And did you know that while your marketing team are saying you've got 30 days to return, your impartial paperwork's only saying you've got 14? Whereas smaller retailers, quite often it's the CEO that we're talking to, or someone who's just got so many different roles and got a feet in both camps, and they can be really reactive because it's such a small team to make decisions and they're always all talking to each other. So smaller retailers, if they get in touch with us early, can actually get returns right and will be very quickly hot on the heels of some of these major retailers that have been ignoring returns for such a long time.
That's brilliant. I think that leads me on to my last question quite nicely. Now, obviously, I'm aware of the customers you have and the retailers you're working with. And I know I've used Rebound's return portals to return some items I've been buying over the last 12 months. And it's actually been a really easy process to use. So I guess what I'd like to find out from you really is what Rebound's mission is when it comes to your clients, the retailers you work with. You know, what's the overall mission of Rebound?
So our official mission statement is that we're on a mission to help retailers achieve smarter, more sustainable returns while enhancing the customer experience. And we do that through our combination of our returns technology and our logistics network. So giving the retailers everything that they need to be able to offer that winning customer returns experience. And a huge part of that is data, and giving retailers eyes on data that they were previously just so blind to with labels in boxes. They can see what's coming back and why, and they can just make really smart decisions on that. So if they can see that, you know, this dress is always being returned because it's faulty, they can see that that's a manufacturing issue that they really need to deal with. If it's, you know, always coming back because it's not as expected, perhaps they need to update their product photography, for example. So just giving retailers data, it's just, you know, data is power, and they can make so many smarter decisions. And there's been a real culture of blame on shoppers and, you know, blaming serial returners for high return rates. And we're trying to get retailers to recognize where they can, you know, lower their return rates and improve that journey themselves, because, well, you know, what, we're a business that makes money from returns. There's no secret about that. We recognize that there needs to be that sustainable level of returns that's also financially viable for the retailer.
That's brilliant. It's so good to hear. And I know us here at Smart Freight cannot wait to continue to work with you guys at Rebound to be able to offer, you know, the last mile logistics from our point of view, but also to offer world-class returns from Rebound. So very excited to sort of continue on the journey we are with you guys. So thank you both so much for joining me today. It's been a really cool episode. It's a really interesting insight there from both of you. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having us. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been great to have just like a total returns geek out for 45 minutes. This is what Emily and I live for.
It's been brilliant. It's a great episode. So for anybody listening that's interested in finding out more about Rebound Returns, which I hope you are, please visit reboundreturns.com. So that concludes series number 2 of Smart Freight Podcasts. Keep an eye out for series 3 that will be coming to you in the summer. And until then, bye for now.